We'll begin by saying that mesmerism, therefore hypnotism, is a very ancient practice. But mesmerism fell out of favor and during the 1800s, and it was considered a superstition, and only the ignorant followed or investigated this. However, the medical profession and those of great learning found that it was not superstition, and it had some value to it. So the doctors who laughed at mesmerism were ashamed to use this word, so they invented a new one called hypnotism. Now, hypnotism is really it's really the subject of suggestion, and this is where one is made to do things against one's own nature. The danger of this is that it is considered the blind leading the blind. But what is hypnotism? Well, it's really the contracting of the cells of the body and brain from the periphery to the center. This is the same process or a phenomenon of the death state. Whereas magnetism starts from within and proceeds to the outer surface. Now, the hypnotism is this idea of suggestion, where the desire of the waking will and judgment of the subject are thwarted. And really, the operator's power is being used. And this does not add any knowledge to the person that is hypnotized. This externalization and localization of the nerve's sensitiveness and mental impressionability of the subject. This was really a form of witchcraft in the earlier ages, and where many were put to death, were burned at the stake. We have to understand that the true nature of our being is made of thought and consciousness. The danger is not knowing these things and processes, but in the lack of morality and ethics in their use. Man is a soul who lives on thoughts and proceeds on thoughts. Thoughts may be words, ideas, or pictures. So what happens? The soul man needs an intermediate link with nature. And this intermediate link, he cognizes and experiences life. And this is the ethereal double, or the astral body, which is our center of perception, which is the true hidden self. Now, self-hypnotization, it's the constant brooding upon something, and it's imprinted upon the astral body. And this is what we find and is known as stigmata, which is the results of things materializing on the material plane through mental suggestion. So the hypnotic process is a disjunction between the soul man and the astral body. When this happens, the real man is deprived of will, and that therefore some suggestions come on unopposed. and arise a sensitivity to suggestions which are impressed on the astral body. Now, this influence of the operator, once thrown on the subject, will remain until the day of the operator's death. Now, we see in this operation varied personalities come to the surface, which is caused because of this division between the soul of man, or the man soul, and the astral man, which releases limitations of brain memory so that the inner memory may act. So what comes out or comes forth are reenactment of some part of his former life or lives. Now that's one explanation for these varied personalities. But the other is that this leaves the man open to different entities that may enter the body and brain. These are astral shells. And that they may enter the body of the hypnotized person, and the person will become insane. Now, many persons in this day and age are half hypnotized already. They're easily influenced by unprincipled and immoral persons. We see this quite evident in our society at large. Now, the power to hypnotize and to be sensitive are both progressive states of one of our racial evolution. This can be used for selfish, wicked, and degrading purposes unless understood and practice true ethics based on brotherhood of man. We need to curtail acts of selfishness and greed. Now, we all know of many forms of healing. There's mental healing and metaphysical healing, mind cures, spiritual healing, and Christian Science. These are all forms of self-hypnosis. And we are told that we are not to look for the cure of the disease, but the cause of the disease. That once the mind is withdrawn from an ailment, the body has a power to cure itself. Mental healing will throw the disease back into the mind. But it would only come back out with more force than before. And we are told that all diseases are caused by man. If we hinder the elementals or the elemental lives, they resent it. It is the God in us which demands self-advancement, self-induced and self-devised exertion, and the full acceptance of responsibility. So, this is only one half of the coin. This is only hypnotism. Now we'll hear a little bit about what mesmerism is.
Well, mesmerism is an ancient art. It was rediscovered by Anton Mesmer. It's also known as animal magnetism it was the British who started calling it mesmerism, and the name was attached to him. And but it's magnetism. It's a name given to an art. It's the exhibition of a power to act upon others and the facility to be acted upon. Now, it is also called hypnotism. Later it was kind of rebranded, but it's really not, as was going into by the previous speaker. So it's called magnetism because the person sometimes followed the hand of the operator as if drawn like iron filings to a magnet. Now, from Isis, we have a short quote here. This is Isis 1, page 129. Mesmerism is the most important branch of magic, and its phenomena are the effects of the universal agent which underlies all magic and has produced at all ages these so-called miracles, end quote. It is an invisible universal agent. It has been called chaos by the ancients, and also the soul of the world. It is an invisible but tangible fluid. It has been called the living fire and the spirit of light. Hypnotism, as HPB calls it, a false nose on a very old face. So this animal magnetism is a fluid, and those who can see into it, where it belongs, assert its existence as a subtle form of matter. The fluid is part of the astral substance around everyone. The aura of the mesmerizer is thrown off and received by the subject. It wakes up certain inner and non-physical divisions of the persons operated on, causing a change of relations between the various sheaths surrounding the inner man. This makes possible different degrees of intelligence and of clairvoyance, etc. And it's very important to remember that it has no influence on the higher self. There were people who claimed that, but that is not the teaching. So there we have a brief synopsis of mesmerism. And as was stated, it was very popular for about it was very popular for 75 years, and then it started to fall out of popularity at the middle of the 19th century, and it pretty much all but died out and was discredited by the year 1925. There has been some interest in it, not only in theosophical circles, but of course, New Age. And some of these, of course, want money for their services. And that is a form of black magic, we're told, to use anything spiritual to collect money for anything spiritual. So there are unscrupulous people out there that are trying to revive mesmerism and hypnotism and whatnot. But these are occult arts, as it were. And certain people are better at mesmerizing than others. People with more of a dynamic and robust nature, as it were. And it can drain the individual over the years, because it is, in a sense, it's has to do with the aura. One of the the first president of the Theosophical Society was a mesmerist, but he was cautioned as he got older to stop it. So cures can be effected at a distance from the wound by reason or virtue of the directive faculty between that and the wound. So there was a writing of a monk going back to 1611 is the earliest known precursor of mesmerism, animal magnetism. It was 100 years before Mesmer. Now, mesmerism fell out of favor right prior to the French Revolution, and there was a French Academy committee, which included Benjamin Franklin. They passed sentence on the subject, and they condemned it in substance, and then mesmerism fell into disrepute. One can speculate the reasons behind that. Quite possibly political, because it was very popular in the French court and among the aristocracy and the wealthy of France. So that's just, one can speculate on that. We're not saying, we're not making any statements to that effect. There were demonstrations made before the U.S. Senate, Daniel Webster being one who lectured on this system of mesmerism. It's also been called psychology, which of course this all falls under that umbrella of psychology. So this fluid is composed in part of the astral substance of everyone. It's part of the physical atoms in a finely divided state. So the mesmerizer throws off this, you know, and it does, it was used for anesthesia, even amputations, with a high degree of success before modern anesthesia became the norm. There are many, many testaments to the practicalness of using mesmerism in the medical profession. When the mesmerized state is complete, and often when it is partial, there is an immediate paralyzing of the power of the body to throw its impressions and thus modify the conceptions of the inner being. So it's very much different from the hypnotism, because it does not affect the higher self at all, and it doesn't contract. It doesn't put one under the influence of the mesmerizer. It doesn't interfere with the higher spiritual states as hypnotism does. So we think we'll stop there. There's an excellent article by William Q. Judge, rather lengthy article called Mesmerism. And it's in the pamphlet, Mesmerism and Hypnotism. And so your questions on are invited at this time. Yes.
We sometimes get confused actually between the difference between mesmerism and hypnotism, and the second speaker did differentiate that the hypnotist can affect the higher self as well as the physical, whereas mesmerism is just with the physical and it expands the cells rather than contracts them. But what our question is, what is it that the practitioner is doing? Do they know? We know that one of the issues with people practicing some types of practices that they don't know what they're doing. And whereas with like masters and adepts, they know how to control it. So is one of the issues then with the practitioners of mesmerism and hypnotism is that they really don't know how to control it? Or does the mesmerist can know how and the hypnotist doesn't? We're just a little different.
Well, mesmerism is not a dangerous psychic practice, whereas hypnotism is. But we do think that there aren't that many sages or adepts out there that are fully versed in occult science. So it is an ability. Everyone has magnetism. Everyone affects our thoughts, our words, our deeds affect everyone throughout the world. But it's those that have this kind of robust nature are highly magnetic, or naturally better at this. But then if they don't have the knowledge with mesmerism, we haven't read where there's any harm done with attempting mesmerism, whereas with hypnotism, you know, the will of the operator is obviated and taken over, and impressions are implanted that are hazardous. You need to unmute if you want to. MDW, did you want to respond to that?
Well, yes, that the problem with hypnotism is that the blind are leading the blind. The true knowledge of the manipulation of our astral body, or the implanting of impressions, are done all the time. But the problem with hypnotism is that the person is giving up their own free will. And what happens is that there is like a passive state is being promoted, where one is to be under the control of the operator, one has to give up or lessen his own personal controls. And that hypnotism is really a contraction of the cells in the brain, and from the periphery into the center, where magnetism is the opposite. It starts in the center and it expands outward. And in hypnotism, there's no knowledge that can be gained. Whereas in mesmerism, there is. And this, in hypnotism was a form of witchcraft, and many people were burned at the stake for using these powers.
Thank you. SL?
Mm-hmm. First, a quick comment and then a question. The only potential harm that we understand from mesmerism, one was mentioned, of course, the draining of the energy of the mesmerizer over time if they do it. But the other reason is because there's a sharing or an injection, if you will, of the auric fluid, the astral fluid of the mesmerizer into the patient. If there be any impurity, moral or psychic impurity, in the operator, that can be transferred to the subject as well. So it is recommended that the mesmerizer obviously do it with the highest of motives, but should also purify themselves or make the attempt to live a virtuous life as much as possible. The question we have, though, is in ISIS, HBB quotes, half, if not two-thirds of all our illnesses are due to our desire and imagination, and we should try to correct our imaginations. If imagination is the cause of all our illnesses, if we try to entertain in our mind positive, healthy images, and thereby have a beneficial effect on the body, is that a form of suggestion or self-hypnosis? The cultivation of the imagination in that way?
Yes, we would think that that is a positive approach to life, is that by having a positive attitude, one sort of peoples their space with these positive, with this positive energy. And that, you know, that we see the opposite also very true, that if we are negative and foreboding, that we attract that to ourselves.
We're cautioned about telling tales or gossip, and because that the imagination of one goes, it just, you know, often people take what they hear as a settled fact and they don't question it, and it amplifies. And that's, we think that's what two-thirds of the world's trouble, half if not two-thirds, a large portion of that is, well, we see it in the media now, but before the media, it was just one individual to another. We know of cases where people are not in communication with the outside world, say on a ship out at sea before they had the modern communications, where tales would be told and exaggerated and amplified. And that's one kind of ancient example of it. But and then with the witchcraft too, I mean, some of them were psychic practices, but a lot of the times it was hearsay. There might not have been any psychic practice involved whatsoever. Somebody wanted their land, or somebody just hated them for whatever reason. And you know, in Europe, there were about 20,000 witches put to death, whereas in Salem, Massachusetts, there were only 19. So although that's what we're familiar with in this country, it's just a drop in the bucket compared to the Europeans of old.
And it's also stated that really half, you know, many people in the world in which we live are half hypnotized already. And we see that it's quite evident in our world, you know, from television to gossip, you know, where people will do things without really thinking about them, just through suggestion. We see the mob mentality. We see people doing things that are immoral and improper, and others following suit. So, and it states that the race itself is becoming more sensitive, and that this self or this hypnotizing effect is becoming more and more coming out of our racial evolution. But it can be used for selfish and wicked and degrading purposes.
We wonder, the term was just used, that the phrase was just used, that the race is becoming more sensitive. We wonder if they're becoming more passive. There's so many distractions now that people are looking for material things. It's almost as if they're wanting to escape, wanting to detach. So if they're not looking inward, looking at their higher nature, then it just seems that it would be a natural course of events that people would become hypnotized by something that they appear that they can join, that they can be a part of. And if people were not so distracted, were not so materialistic, we wonder if things would get improved.
Well, we know that we live in a very materialistic age, and people are therefore influenced by what they see. And that this is how hypnotized or we become, because we are, as was said, we are constantly bombarded by outer stimulus. And if we do not have a firm foundation in our spiritual nature, we are often taken off course and fall into these immoral and improper thoughts, words, and deeds.
TK, would you like to?
So then it sounds like that, you know, we're talking about one of the reasons why hypnosis can become so much more prevalent is because of materialism. It sounds actually that a person is not going to be hypnotized if he chooses not to be. So he has to submit to whatever the source of the hypnotism is, whether it's in a church or a mosque, a child in a schoolroom, a person in front of the television. If they're willing and open to passively, unobjectively, uncritically accept whatever the teacher, the priest, the cleric, or the commercial is going to tell them, that's the direction they head off in. Is that what we're saying? And the reason for that, and the materialism comes in, really, it's because we're so not grounded in our own inner nature. We're looking for answers outside because we're not worthy of giving ourselves the own answers to our own questions.
We think that's exactly the point, is that the passivity of our nature is becoming more and more prevalent in the population because there is a lack of critical thinking, a lack of skepticism, you know, a lack of strong wills, you know, that we're not being what we would consider to be critically thinking in a manner in which we take responsibility for everything. If we would consider some of the things that that are presented to us and take responsibility for them, we wouldn't act on them.
SL?
So in her address to the American Theosophists, HPV pointed out that in the West and in the Americas especially, in the 20th century, we'd be heading into a new cycle of our development where the psychic will naturally come to the fore. And if we're not careful, it will run out to outrun the monastic. So all this interest and development of sensitivity, passivity, and even display of powers that makes hypnotism and mediumship, channeling, hypnotism so popular and fascinating is because of this. The problem is that without an understanding of our psychic nature, we tend to mistake it as being spiritual because it's so awe-inspiring, points us to powers beyond our physical explanation, or we try to drag it down to the level of material and explain everything in terms of atoms and molecules and material forces, both ways being wrong.
Yes. Often the lowest of the seven levels of the astral, the slag pit, as it's called, the drink of all the worst thoughts of humanity that are there, are mistaken for spirituality, which it's not. And there's a morbid curiosity with the dead and communications with shells, and it's just that unfortunately is it's out there. It's something that the philosophy of theosophy has always warned against and will continue to always warn against, because these practices are so injurious to ourselves and others. JCS, did you want to say something?
Yeah, the uses of the words skepticism and materialism reminded me of a discussion from Friday night's roundtable. At that roundtable, there was a reading from The Secret Doctrine, Volume 1, page 480, that says this: materialism and skepticism are evils that must remain in the world as long as man has not quitted his present gross form to don the one he had during the first and second races of this round. Unless skepticism and our present natural ignorance are equilibrated by intuition and a natural spirituality, every being afflicted with such feelings will see in himself no better than a bundle of flesh, bones, and muscles. So skepticism is really a double-edged sword, isn't it? On one hand, we need to be a critical thinker and question and be skeptical. But on the other hand, if it doesn't lead to intuition, it will lead to materialism and be very destructive. It's a dilemma, isn't it?
It is. It's definitely a dilemma. It's all the test, check, and verify. Not just, a lot of skepticism is just throwing the baby out with the bathwater, as it were. Just the denialism of atheistic science, just that blind matter, just the big bang and blind matter blindly goes along, and it's just, it's blindness. And it's the Achilles heel of science. Fortunately, not all scientists are like that at all. Many of them are investigating other realms, and we need to be skeptic, but we need to be intelligent skeptics. We need to do the work. We need to really to just check and verify. And none of the teachings of theosophy, including the three fundamental propositions, which are the basis of the whole philosophy, they're put forth as propositions, not as dogmas, not as something to be believed under pain of sin or punishment, because that's just going the way of the dogmatic churchianity. And that's really why the world largely is in the mess it's in today. SL?
In her article, Psychic and Noetic Action, HPV points out that for the medium, their physical nature becomes permeated with this astral, and therefore it has an intense a negative effect on the nervous system, the vibration, resulting in nervous and physical diseases. So we wonder, because of the natural development of psychic interests, psychic practices, hypnotism, mediumship, psychic phenomena that we see in the population currently, could that be an explanation, or could that be a warning that such practices make us more susceptible to nervous psychological conditions and also impair our medical health, physical health as well? That it's another danger, you might say, of these practices.
Well, we see that the psychiatrist's offices are becoming more and more busy because of the psychic influence of this nervousness, the susceptibility is permeating our civilization. That we live in a world of suggestion, and if we are not well grounded, we can be told a lie and we think it's the truth. And we see that happening more and more all the time. So that nervousness that we exhibit makes us unsure of ourselves. If we do not have a firm foundation in who we are and what we are, this sensitivity makes us uncertain. So the real purpose or the real chore that we have is to become grounded in our true nature. And I think we have a chat.
We do. Can you read it, or do you want me to read it?
If you would read it, please.
Sure. Can Reiki, massage, chiropractic inadvertently apply hypnotism and mesmerism, which could lead to holes is in quotes, in the recipient's audio? Oh, excuse me. We don't really know about that. We don't know. So, SL?
Well, once again, one has to be careful. There are massage therapists and chiropractors, clinicians of all types, who don't necessarily practice hypnotism or mesmerism, but are naturally gifted. And so inadvertently and unconsciously to themselves, by the laying on of hands, they may transfer some of this magnetic healing to the other. And so the same warnings would apply. Regarding Reiki, if you go into the Reiki manuscripts and you study it, it is definitely a psychic practice. And in addition to having a kind of healing effect initially also later brings out and is used to develop psychic phenomena. So it is, in a sense, another name for a long line of practices where there is a transfer of the lower magnetic energy of the individual to the other person. And it can potentially have harmful effects. The problem is that many people in the West mistake or purposely mislead others to think that the Reiki healing is due to a spiritual influence, where it's clear in their own documents that it's not spiritual, but it is a lower energy that's being transferred. So one has to do their own research in that, because it's a modern name for a very ancient practice.
The second chat, can audio tracks without visuals hypnotize or mesmerize? Perhaps. Third is the use of hair transference picture dolls more effective in close proximity? Not even sure what that means. We don't know if the if ZZ wants to explain that third one. SL?
Yes. We're not sure what ZZ meant by the third one, but we were wondering if they meant a type of voodoo practice where one uses a doll or an image of the individual as a representative of their nature. And by applying certain pins or needles to the doll, can transfer magnetically an effect to the astral body of the individual, and it could have a beneficial but also very often a harmful effect, hence its reputation. And also regarding the audio tracks, if the audio tracks are used in any way to be self-suggestive, then it's no different than hearing any other kind of hypnotic suggestion. It's just done through a different medium.
So we have a lot of mediums out there, and we're talking about, you know, we often talk about being mediumistic. And medium, we mean like television, radio, thought transference, whatnot. But mediumistic is passive, and it's cultivating passivity, and it's just leaving oneself open for whatever may come, and it's. You know, we're constantly warned against it in many places to be intelligent and thoughtful, and just not accept anything on its face value. So, JCS, were you about to raise your hand, or you just have your hand on your chin there? Okay, that's fine. Oh, okay. So these practices, you know, there's so much out there. It's really hard to keep up with. As things accelerate, it seems like every day something new is coming up. So we just try not to be distracted. Yes, JCS.
Now the thought occurs.
If
we're swimming in this ocean of astral potential, daily. What can we do in the conscious state that would protect us from misuse of action or power or misuse of imagination and will and desire? What practices that are practical would theosophy offer?
Well, there's concentration and meditation for sure. And that we should daily practice that. And altruism, if our intent is always for others first and for ourselves last, that if we benefit as a side benefit, not as our primary focus, then we're told that that's a great protection to have that frame of mind to being ever the altruist. It protects us against an awful lot of harm. And not to take hearsay, if somebody says something about someone else, defend that person, unless you know it's absolutely true, and then you should be silent and not carry that tale any farther. Let it stop with you and to die a natural death, as it were.
I think, as was said before, is that we need to keep a positive attitude. We have to keep our imagination free and open, and live in the world of kindness, and try to be a benefit to each other, and that our imagination shouldn't be allowed to wander into frivolity and things of little concern. Let our imagination run wild. We can imagine a world that is filled with love and freedom, and keep our attitude positive, and not dwell on that which is negative.
SL?
If we have the opportunity to listen to friends or family or others who confide in us, tell us about their worries and what depresses them, they'll tell us that it tends to be worse at night, that during the day they're so busy with their jobs and their families, it's not as bad as later in the evening when they seem to have less to do, their minds seem to drift. So we think we can take a lesson from that, in that we should always be looking to what is our duty in the moment. What should we be doing now for others, for family, for our friends, and especially at night, to develop some type of practice of calming the mind, whether it's meditation, whether it's reading, whether it's self-reflection, self-planning for what we want to do, but to keep the mind active, potentially, especially at night, as we enter that sleep stage, because the sleep stage, if entered properly, can be very helpful and beneficial to our lives.
Yes, the nighttime is the daytime of the soul, it's said. And if we read, if we meditate, contemplate, and read something inspirational and uplifting, and think of others, and we will have a good night's sleep, most likely. So we have a minute. Does anyone want to make any statements or comments?
No.
Okay. Well, we really thank everyone for their participation on the verbal and the planes. All those that are considering these ideas, we are all affected by it, and it is most appreciated. So we will adjourn the meeting at this time. Thank you, and have a good day.
Thank you.